Chapter 32. A Dreadful Neighborhood. Hilo ripped the tape from Dolorum's lips and pulled the cloth out of his mouth. The broken man's face was sober. They needed to ditch Dahlia's car, but Dolorum was a problem. Trace didn't want to toss the old master in a dumpster until he healed at dawn, but if the car had a GPS security system, they were screwed. The police would pull them over, and Dolorum would end up in an ICU. And he would do time for stealing a Dred's car. Trace racked his brain, and then remembered. What did Arcus Magdalene call it? Roaster? Flirting with the wrong side of the speed limit, Hilo gunned the Nissan and went home. And there it was, still blighting the parking lot of the Sao Paulo apartment complex with its miserable bulk. He swung Dahlia's car into the parking stall next to it in reverse so that the passenger side doors were next to each other. With a yank, he pulled open Roaster's squealing door, and then the Nissan's. Dolorum was dead weight. Pulling his beefed-up biker persona out of the Nissan and stuffing him into Roaster was like trying to shove a sedated bear into a broom closet, flaccid appendages continually trying to escape. He hoped no one was peering out their apartment windows while he made the awkward exchange of a busted-up man and Japanese swords. What would Mindy and Scarlet think? The truck belched and banged its way out of the parking lot like a drunken locomotive. The drive belt screamed in horror as he pulled out into the street.
"Was it just me?"
Dolorum said, head contorted against the dashboard.
"Or did Dahlia use more than one bestowal?"
"She used three on me, probably four."
"Good. I'm not crazy."
"She's the second Dred I've seen do that," Hilo explained. "I've got a lot to tell you. But we've got to find somewhere to hole up and wait for dawn." Dolorum tried to shift, but collapsed awkwardly on the seat.
"There's a nice little rest area off of I-10.
Hilo stopped to get gas in Tucson and fill the overheating radiator. Green fluid dripped out from the guts of the beast as if it had been stabbed. He paid the clerk in cash, the truck's 5 miles per gallon not doing his wallet any favors. Pedal to the floor. Roaster managed a respectable 61 miles per hour on the freeway as they went east away from Phoenix and out into the lonely solitude of the sandy tan desert. The heat gauge approached critical as they pulled into the Texas Canyon rest stop, parking in a remote corner, back with the big rigs. Hilo killed the engine, acrid smoke wisping up from under the hood. Around them, jagged hills gashed the skyline, and green shrubs anchored into cracks slowly crumbling the weakening stone. Higher hills and mountains, brown and sterile, rose in the distance in the unyielding sun.
"Could you adjust my body to something a little more natural?" Dolorum requested.
"Yeah, sorry." After wrestling Dolorum upright and snapping his joints back in the right direction, Hilo rolled down the windows and leaned back. The dry desert air settled on them, the steady hum of passing cars on the freeway soothing frayed nerves. Hilo told Dolorum everything that had happened, uncaring of what the Ash Angel organization might think about his divulging sensitive information to an outsider. Dolorum's face scrunched.
"And so they booted you out on her account?"
he asked, once Hilo had finished.
"They felt I was a security risk, and I can see their point. Dahlia seems to have some magical ability to find me wherever I am. They can't have that hanging over every mission they send me on."
"True," Dolorum agreed.
"But it should narrow down the source of the leak. How many people know where you are all the time?"
"If it's a person, not many," Hilo said. "But if they have hacked our communications network somehow, they might be able to find anybody who has a phone." Dolorum thought for a moment.
"I don't know. Did you get the sense that other teams were having security failures like yours?"
"I never heard," Hilo admitted. "I don't think they'd tell everyone about it. Since the Blank Massacre and Trevex, they've been fighting to keep morale up." Dolorum grunted.
"It almost makes me want to join back up so I can see what's going on. If I had more than a few months left on this mortal plane, I might just do it. Still, this business with Dahlia, or Aklima, is either a gigantic scam or a turning point for Ash Angels and Dreds." You've got to promise me something. If she's really Eve's daughter, you have to ask her.
Ask her what?
Well, it's the deepest theological question of all time. She can put it to rest once and for all.
And that is, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons?
Hilo smiled. I'll try to remember.
The air cooled during the dead hours of the night. They traded stories, Dolorum's past more colorful than Hilo had imagined. He'd been a drunk, drug addict, and thief until his sister pulled him out and straightened him up. Motorcycles filled the gap left by his abandoned addictions. One night he'd stepped between a convenience store clerk and a nervous robber whose inexperienced trigger finger had flinched, the .38 revolver punching a hole in Dolorum's head. The Ash Angels gave Dolorum structure and purpose, but accidentally killing Telamirin's father had changed everything. He spoke of his love for her and the satisfaction of fatherhood. He'd returned to the Ash Angel organization briefly after faking his death, only to find it too regimented for his tastes after he had experienced years of freedom. He apprenticed briefly with an old master named Cyrus and never looked back. Dawn finally broke into the empty desert sky, and Hilo enjoyed the clear head that always came with rapture. Dolorum's mangled joints and bones pulled together. Before they left, Dolorum walked inside the rest stop and practically emptied the vending machine of its snacks, while Hilo filled the radiator with water carried from the rest stop in a bucket he found in Roaster's camper shell.
"Where to now?" Hilo asked as Dolorum crammed his snacks into the capacious glove compartment.
"Back to the club," Dolorum said, unwrapping a candy bar and handing it to Hilo.
"Isn't that risky?"
"Yep. But I've got a flock. I can't just walk out on them. Besides, the Dreads probably think you've moved on and wouldn't be stupid enough to come back."
Hilo grabbed some Skittles out of Dolorum's pile.
"So does that mean if I go back, I'm really stupid or really smart?"
Dolorum grinned.
"It's smart if they're not there, stupid if they are."
He swallowed a handful of peanut M&Ms.
"Love these things."
They pulled out onto the highway, the truck struggling against the wind and its own shape. Once above 50, the steering wheel vibrated so badly, Hilo thought his teeth might fall out. Letting go at that speed was not an option. Left to itself, Roadster would swerve so hard to the right, he would be in the desert in 2 seconds flat.
Hilo's phone beeped, and Dolorum grabbed it.
"Looks like Cassandra," Dolorum reported, yelling over the din of the shambling car.
"Great. What does she say?"
Maybe he could get some news.
"She says need favor. Check out 37 Pearson Drive in Lexington, Kentucky. Be discreet. Do a heavy morph, please."
"She said please, so I think you have to do it."
"She wants me to check out an address in Kentucky?"
"Yep."
"It was something to do."
"Tell her okay."
Dolorum typed the response.
"She says thanks. Well, we'll go grab the bikes and have a little road trip through Kentucky. You're in for a treat."
"Why?"
"Great greasy food. Have you ever had a Snickers bar breaded, wrapped in bacon, and deep fried?"
"That's just wrong, Dolorum. I mean morally wrong."
He laughed.
"Oh no, my friend. The good book tells us that the righteous get to eat the fat of the land, and we will be making some stops to reap our divinely promised blessings. Green beans boiled in bacon grease, fried chicken legs wrapped in bacon, a bacon, sausage, and fried egg sandwich. Maybe the Jews are right about the whole pig thing."
Dolorum shook his head.
"No way. By the end of this trip, you will be converted to the gospel of greasy food, Hilo, mark my words. You've been in the Ash Angel organization for only a few months, and you've already been infected with a bad case of solemn seriousitis. Sure, Ash Angels have responsibilities, but don't forget the fun and rewards. And the rewards I'm talking about are deep fried."
The Redemption Motorcycle Club was deserted. Dolorum left a note on the door explaining that a family matter would take him away from the flock for a while. They pulled the truck into the garage, locked it in, and roared out on their motorcycles dressed in leather and do-rags.
Fearing the weather farther north and to satisfy Dolorum's obsession for all foods unhealthy, they kept south, passing through Little Rock, Memphis, and Nashville. Dolorum's days raising Tella from behind the wheel of a truck had turned him into an encyclopedia of out-of-the-way food joints that served the most determinedly artery-clogging culinary creations Hilo had ever witnessed. Sure, a double bacon cheeseburger with extra cheese, extra bacon, and two glazed donuts as the buns would instantly inflict a normal with type 2 diabetes, but Hilo had to confess he loved it. French fries he could wring oil from, ice cream so rich it puckered his mouth, grease-slimed fried chicken drenched in gelatinous white pepper gravy and served with a veritable storage tank of sugary pop. Delicious. Once he fully embraced his Ash Angel invulnerability to eating total crap, there was no holding back. After every gluttonous stop, Dolorum would shout hallelujah before powering off on the next leg of the journey. After their third stop, where they ate sandwiches towering with an obscene amount of fatty roast beef, ham, and beloved bacon, Hilo rejoined Dolorum's praise with a hearty amen. They rumbled on to Pearson Drive in Lexington, Kentucky in the early afternoon on a cloudy, blustery day. The trees hadn't quite recovered from winter, forlorn branches stretching over the road. After the open vistas of Arizona, the morass of trees felt like prison walls. Crispy brown leaves skittered in the wind, the day feeling like leftover autumn warmed up in a microwave. It all felt familiar to Hilo from his days living in Missouri. Pearson Drive cut through an old neighborhood. Low roof lines sat atop rectangular, single-story houses of dingy white and red brick. Shards of the broken sidewalks and driveways collected in the gutters, brown weeds poking their way out of the tiniest cracks. The wind jostled trees and bushes tall enough to dwarf the houses they were meant to accent. Only the rush of the wind in their ears interrupted the vacant silence of empty houses. The house at 37 Pearson Drive stuck out. Thick blue siding and a two-story colonial design elevated it above the cookie-cutter mold of its neighbors. While small, it had a wraparound porch and a backyard bordered by a chain-link fence. Two boys tossed a football in the side yard, both straight and tall. They ran to the fence to watch the thundering motorcycles rumble by. An old green Toyota Corolla with bald tires sat in the sloped driveway. They took another pass a few minutes later, finding a dread lounging on the front porch of the home next door. He was a bald, pudgy mess. A ratty tank top spotted with what Hilo hoped were lemonade stains dropped over a bulbous gut. Thin, lumpy legs of shocking white jutted out from a pair of patriotic red and blue shorty shorts worn despite weather that called for a jacket. The dread eyed them from behind a long drag on his cigarette as they passed, the remaining wisps of blonde hair on his balding pate flip-flopping in the wind. They drove a street over and parked the bikes.
"The dread lives at 56, Pearson," Dolorum said. "You sure it's 37 we're after?"
"You read the text," Hilo said. "It can't be good to have a family with two boys living next to a dread.
Should we ask Cassandra what she wants, or take him out and be on our way?"
"We should at least check it out. We need a disguise of some sort. I'd say Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses, but we don't have the books and magazines.
Maybe we could be security system salesmen."
"In this neighborhood?" Dolorum scoffed. "Chances are nobody would even answer the door."
While they tossed ideas around, the solution walked up to them. Two teenage girls were going door to door selling what Hilo recognized as discount cards. He and his brother used to sell them to raise money for football, local businesses pledging to give customers a bargain if they showed the card. Since they were both morphed into their biker personas, it took a little convincing to get two sweet-looking schoolgirls to believe they wanted to buy the whole stack. But once Hilo whipped out his stack of money, they were happy to make the exchange and go home early to get out of the wind.
"Looks like we're selling discount cards for girls' volleyball," Hilo said, examining his purchase.
Dolorum grinned.
"Might seem a little weird, but hey, when I was that age, if some cute girls like that came up and asked me to help sell cards, I'd do it. We'll need to morph. I'm a bit slow.
I'm getting better, but I'm warning you. We'd best get started then.
After a quick trip to Walmart for some younger clothes, they drove to a nearby mall where they could occupy a bathroom stall and make the change. Dolorum finished his morph in 5 minutes. Hilo took nearly 30, and while better than usual, Dolorum still shook his head in a very Cassandra-like way and then nitpicked Trace's morph until they rode off. They parked a few blocks away and walked back to Pearson. The gusting wind kept the kids off the streets but blew the aroma of dinner at them as they walked. To keep up appearances, they started at the end of the street and worked their way up. 35 Pearson, the house on the other side of 37, was also occupied by a dread. She was an older woman with stringy black and gray hair whose face had collected the bitterness from every bad divorce. She shut the door in their faces before they could even begin their unpolished sales pitch.
"We need to do the other side of the street," Dolorum said, eyes hardening. "Something sinister is going on here."
They plied their ruse across the street, finding yet a third dread directly across from the house at 37 Pearson, a middle-aged African-American. He stared at them like they were insects until they finished their pitch and then slammed the door in their faces.
"Is there a street on the other side of this house?" Hilo asked. What had Cassandra gotten him into?
"I think it's just woods back there as a buffer for the highway," Dolorum said as they finally approached 37 Pearson. "I've got a bad feeling about this. Three dreads just hanging out in suburbia, all bracketing a single house. Who could be so important they would keep 24/7 surveillance on a house? Aklima's little story about being compelled to do someone's bidding sounds more and more plausible by the minute. There's no way dreads would just park themselves here. I wonder how long it's been like this." "Only one way to find out," Hilo said, rapping on the white door at 37 Pearson.
The older of the two boys they had seen earlier in the yard answered. While only around 7 years old, he radiated confidence and looked them straight in the eye.
"Hey, is your mom or dad home?" Hilo asked.
"Yeah, 1 minute. Mom, door's for you."
A woman in her early 30s came to the door wearing an apron and smiling at them while drying her hands on a dish towel. The robust scent of spaghetti sauce followed her to the door. She was a pretty woman with delicate features, though her thin lips and tired eyes colored her with a serious air. Until she smiled. The friendly gesture cast off the shadows of a tired face framed by long brown hair.
"Hello, Mrs. Hilo began. "Morse, or call me Angelina." "Great. Well, Mrs. Morse, I'm Tom, and this is Brady. We're actually here representing the girls' high school volleyball team."
This admission elicited a smirk from their potential customer.
"Yeah, I know. They asked us to help, so, you know."
Angelina's smile expanded.
"I think I understand." "Well, great. So, they're only $20, and they go to help pay for equipment and trips and stuff. They have lots of great discounts to places in town and pay for themselves really fast." "I'm sorry, guys, but I just can't afford it right now, okay?"
Hilo's mind spun. They needed to get into the house. Dolorum bailed him out.
"Tell you what, we'll give you one if we can get a drink and use the bathroom."
"You don't have to do that," she said. "But come in, and I'll get you something."
"Thank you so much."
She stepped aside, telling the older boy to show Dolorum the way.
"I'll go get some water," she said, heading into the kitchen.
It took Hilo a few moments to figure out why the place felt so much like home, but everything familiar from his own boyhood homes was here. Furniture nicked and stained by a couple of boys, secondhand electronics, walls covered with medals and pictures of military men. Angelina's younger son, who looked to be about 6, watched him while he took it all in. Hilo walked to the entertainment center, where a host of pictures covered the top. He nearly dropped his cards. There, front and center, sat the wedding picture of Mr. David and Mrs. Angelina Morse. And Mr. David Morse. was none other than the young and handsome Goldbow. Pictures clustered around the wedding photos, snapshots of the Morses through the years with their babies, with Goldbow and his parents, Goldbow and his SEAL team. This was Goldbow's family.
"Here you go," Angelina said.
Hilo took the glass, fighting to keep his hand steady.
"So this is your husband?"
"Yep."
"When did he die?"
She scrunched her eyes together.
"Dead? He's not dead. What made you think that?"
Hilo looked down. A wedding ring encircled her finger.
"Oh, sorry, I just thought this looked like a shrine, you know? My grandma had one from my grandpa after he died."
"Well," she said, "he's certainly gone enough to seem like he's dead. The military even told me he was dead once, but that was just a mix-up or a cover-up. I've had a lot of people ask me if I'm a widow or divorced or what. He's got one of those jobs where he can't even talk about what he's doing."
"Oh, right,"
Hilo said, heart constricting as he fought to keep up his fake breathing. Tella's song popped into his mind. She had seen everything in her dream. Here's an angel in chains, chains of pictures and frames, links of smiles and delight, bonds of pleasure and pain. Goldbow had a family. His love for them spilled out of every picture frame. His love chained him to the dark powers he was meant to destroy. Hilo couldn't pull his eyes from the pictures. The truth barreled at him like a freight train traveling at 400 miles an hour while he stood dumbstruck on the tracks. At last, the difficult pieces of the puzzle found a home, the implications of those beautiful photographs strangling him. Dolorum exited the bathroom, and Angelina handed him his glass. Voice barely a mumble, Hilo thanked Angelina and pulled Dolorum out the door before he had drained half his cup. Dolorum remembered to leave a discount card as they left the friendly Angelina Morris and her beautiful boys and headed out into the street.
"Are you okay?" Dolorum asked.
"You didn't see it?
Not much out of the ordinary."
"That's Goldbow's family," Hilo stammered.
"That tall guy who likes Cassandra?"
"Yes."
"So his family before he died. Why would Dreds be watching them?"
Hilo shook his head.
"It's worse than that. They are still his family."
"How can...
Well, you're not saying that...
But...
Oh, no."
The first rule drilled into every Ash Angel was to leave all previous family and friends behind. From his brief experience with Teresa, Hilo knew firsthand the power of old emotions and connections. But as he considered all that their discovery might portend, the one that punched a hole in his heart was the realization of what it would mean to Cassandra. Goldbow 44-2ing her during a mission had nearly killed her. Goldbow 2-timing her with his wife would take a heart just now warming back up and cast it back into a harsh winter. Throw in that the Dreds were camped out around Goldbow's family, no doubt to force his compliance, and the whole situation turned too ugly for Hilo to process.
"What do we do, Hilo?" Dolorum asked. "We've got to assume the Dreds are in contact with each other and probably some handler. If we try to take them out, there's a good chance the family gets killed."
Hilo knew who to call. The new head of Gabriel Operations.